Are you ready?
Hey, think you can tell us what to do? You think you can tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready.
Get ready.
Bow to the master.
Bow to the master.
Degenerate into something fool. We just got tired of doing what you told us to do.
Welcome to Unscripted Wrestling, most controversial wrestling podcast out there. Eric, I can hear you singing through the intro, by the way. Also,
thank you. Oh, okay.
I'm your host, Daniel Hummer, here with my co-hosts, Doug and Eric. How's everybody
How
doing
you?
Tonight?
Great.
Pretty good.
Just trying
to
get over
it. We're here for a special episode? Huh?
No, I was saying the show must go on. None of us have the virus, so.
We're quarantined and chilling, and we're bringing great content. Excuse me. Trying to bring great content, but I'm getting yelled at by my mommy.
Oh. Your mommy? Oh, okay.
All right.
Tell our groupie that it tell our groupie that she has to be quiet while we're recording.
Hi, Sharon.
Eric, cancel this and start it again.
Huh? What are we fine?
Jesus Christ. So, welcome to the podcast. We're doing a very special episode tonight, Caring About Eric.
Yep.
So, we got a lot of ground to cover today, guys. We also got... Do we even fucking plug anybody anymore? Go watch the Dirt Sheet Dudes and listen to them every Friday and Wednesday, I think.
Wednesday
yeah,
and Friday,
Friday night.
Yep.
And every Saturday night. I mean, they the Hollywood Hangout. They did one last week. I think they did it on Sunday. So.
Okay. So follow them. Follow Unscripted Wrestling on Facebook. Playing on Facebook. Make sure to check out the Comedy Barn Facebook group. And, yeah. And Wrestling Reality. Wrestling with Reality with Chad. Good friend of the show.
Yep.
Also... Next week, we'll be doing a special type of episode that I'll go over real quick. We're going to be doing a tier list. So we're basically taking an era, either the Ruthless Aggression era, the Golden era, the Attitude era.
Daniel, are you there?
Daniel was saying... We'll do a chain.
Here we fucking go. Am I here?
Yeah,
I can hear you.
I can hear you now.
All right,
go ahead.
Speak, bud.
As Daniel was saying,
Fuck!
Daniel, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Daniel was having some technical difficulties.
Fucking bit. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
I can hear
you. Yeah.
Okay.
Let me mute you and unmute you. See if that works.
No.
All right, Daniel, go ahead and keep going.
He already did. He hung up, and he'll probably call back. So, as Daniel was saying, we'll be doing a chain podcast with the Attitude Era, the Ruthless Aggression Era, and what else?
Ruthless Aggression
the
era,
era,
the Golden Era. Why don't you just go on the patio and we'll just share the phone? The Ruthless Aggression Era, the Golden Era, the Attitude Era, and then the New Generation Era. So basically, 83 to 94, or actually, no, 84 to 94. 94 to about 97. And
wow,
then,
that's short. What
yeah,
era was that?
That was the New Generation era. And then the
Attitude Era.
Attitude Era, which was about 97 through about 2002.
2002, yep. And then
and
Ruthless
then
Aggression.
The Ruthless Aggression Era, which was about 2002 to about 2009.
Okay, I was going to say 2010, but it's about right. And what's this era?
Huh?
What's this era
this
called?
This is actually the PG era.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's still called the PG era?
I think so.
Okay.
It's probably more the nobody else stop bitching era.
Well,
this era of wrestling that we're in. It's the wrestling fans blow monkey balls era.
Technically, it's
well,
the
social
yeah.
The social media era. There you go. Do you have any plugs, Doug?
I don't plug anybody. I don't like anybody. I barely like you guys.
Fuck you. Also,
Doug.
All right, so let's get started then. Kerry Von Erich.
Okay.
Doug, get us started a little bit on Kerry Von Erich's upbringing, how he started out. Give us a little lay of the land, a little background here.
All right, so basically, Kerry Von Erich was born in 1960. He was actually one of six brothers. To Jack and Doris Atkinson. Now he was one of now only five brothers wrestled, and that's because his oldest brother Jack Jr. Died when he was only died at the age of seven after he accidentally electrocuted himself.
Wow.
Okay. So, but Kerry basically, grew up, his father was a wrestler / promoter in Texas. And basically Kerry kind of just, got into the family business. Dallas. And, Kerry, he was a track and field star. He was a shot put star. Naturally gifted athlete. Good-looking guy.
University of Houston.
Yep. And so he got in the business probably around 1978,
1979. Yep, following the footsteps of his brother, David and Kenny. Not Kenny. Is it Kenny?
Kevin. Yeah. So David and Kevin were already technically already in the business. Mike and Chris hadn't started yet.
Exactly.
So
and yeah, he was probably the most popular one out of the Von Erich brothers. Sorry, Daniel.
Well, it's got to be put into context, too, because nowadays, if you look back on the Von Erichs, yeah, he was the most popular. But if you put it in context of the time, David was going to be the next up to get a title shot. David was the one that was fine-tuned, and he was ready to go. Is that correct, Doug?
Plus, he was the more, with him being the oldest, he was basically the one that, he was the more mature one. He had a better, eye for the business, and he was more, Fritz-like as far as business goes. He was probably a better, he was a better wrestler.
Yeah.
And, he, again, he probably would have been a better businessman, too. And he was somebody that everybody liked him. The NWA wanted him to be champion. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. So the next person in line was Carrie. And Carrie, you know, we talked about him being the most popular. I think that's because he's the better known around the world because of his stint in the WWF at the time. And plus, Carrie also did go to other territories. And also, and this is not a lot of people know this, but Carrie was actually somebody that Vince was looking at to replace Bob Backlund.
Oh,
Carrie?
Wow.
Yeah. It was down to Carrie and Hogan. Carrie was actually up for the role in the Rocky movie. I don't think it wasn't going to be Thunderlips. I think it was back in 80, the one that came out, Rocky IV, they were actually going to have him play Ivan Drago.
Wow.
Really?
Well, I don't think he was going to be Drago. I think he was going to be known as something else, but it fell through. So it was going to, Dolph Lundgren ended up getting the part, but Carrie was supposed to be prior to the Rocky franchise.
Wow.
Vince thought about trying to get Carrie instead. You know, it was either going to be Carrie or Hogan because people saw money in Carrie.
Yeah.
Okay. But the issue was is that they, like the NWA, didn't think they could count on him because Carrie was a party boy. He was a pretty boy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he wasn't necessarily like that back in 83, 84. People could depend on him. It wasn't until after the motorcycle accident in 86 where he got his foot amputated or where he lost his foot where it's just like, okay, you know, he's abusing all these pain pills now.
Yeah, and we're also covering a lot of ground real early on here. So let's go back a little bit. I mean, this show, we don't really go in chronological order or anything. We like to go all over the place. We're a show for people with ADD. But because we like to, you know, tell stories, you know, what we thought of them as a kid, legacy and all that. So, but we are covering a lot of ground here. So to get kind of paint the picture for you, especially because you've been reading and researching a lot this week, right, Eric?
Yeah, I watched a documentary of him today. So I watched some of his match against Ric Flair and a match against Shawn Michaels. So
you would know that Fritz Von Erich, I don't know if he would, and I don't want to say this or speak ill of the dead or anything, but I don't know if he would go as Father of the Year. And it's hard because this is an episode that's based around tragedy. Because this is a person that's based around tragedy. So we're going to be getting deep in this. And maybe I should put a disclaimer for certain listeners. Because, I mean, this is the tragedy of Carrie Von Erich. This is the Von Erich family has always been snake bit, kind of like our Sunday show.
Yeah.
And and the thing about it is, it's hard to track, but maybe the biggest tragedy is Carrie. And we'll probably get to that at the end. But let's talk about how we started, because when these kids are born, you know, he was a standout in track and field. Was it kind of already necessary, Doug, or established is the word I'm looking for, that these kids are all going to be wrestlers?
I think it in Fritz's mind, I think he was hoping. Because, you know, Fritz was already a big star. And Fritz also traveled the territories. All right. So, you know, they kind of grew up in Texas, but also, for a time, they actually did live in Buffalo.
Yeah.
That's actually where Jack died. Jack Jr., the firstborn.
Really?
Yeah, wow. He actually died when they were living in Buffalo. They moved back to Texas. I think it was basically determined at an early age. And this is the thing, like now you hear interviews of wrestlers or former wrestlers saying, I don't want my kids in the wrestling business.
No.
You're not getting into business. Billy Gunn did the AEW Unrestricted podcast just yesterday. Well, it dropped yesterday. And he basically said, he goes, I told my boys when they were growing up, they're not getting in the wrestling business unless they really want to.
Yeah.
But if you want to get in the wrestling business, you got to get a college education. But it was different back then. Because especially like if you ran a territory, if you were the promoter of a territory, back then in the territory days, and we didn't necessarily get into this last week during the territory episode because we were it turned into an interview with Scott Casey. Okay. Which I'm not knocking because it was a damn fine episode. By the way, also happy belated birthday to Scott Casey. His birthday was yesterday.
Happy birthday,
okay.
Scott.
So it was, but like back then in the territory days, if you were a promoter and you had sons, you automatically kind of started to groom them at an early age. That, hey, you boys are going to take over my business.
Yeah.
And
yep.
As far as Fritz being Father of the Year, I think Fritz put a lot of pressure on the boys, some more than others. And, like, especially the two younger ones, Mike and Chris, they felt that pressure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And probably Chris more than anybody, because Chris was, and I don't mean to get off topic here, but that's what we do. Chris was the shortest one of the boys. He was not built like a wrestler. He could not wrestle. He was not a good wrestler. He was very fragile. But he felt like in order for his father to love him, he had to be in the business. And that's unfortunate, and that's why Chris was technically the first Von Erich, or not, actually, I don't even know if you can necessarily say that Mike committed suicide. I mean, I think he did, but he was already sick to begin with.
Yeah, I think they called, he didn't call his suicide.
But, you know, Chris committed suicide, and it had nothing to do with, you know, illness or anything like that. It had more to do with, you know, he felt sorry for himself and he felt like he was better off dead.
Yeah, and okay, so Chris is a weird situation because, like you said earlier, Eric, you want to talk about Carrie tonight. This is a Carrie Von Erich episode. This isn't on all the Von Erichs, but it's really hard because their family is so stitched together. To where you're basically talking about all of them, and you can't help but not go into all of them because they're such a tight family. So, I mean, we'll try. But the thing with Chris is, do you think that that's true? That he, because he got into drugs too, and he had depression issues. Do you think? Because that's the way WWE paints it on the DVD and that stories. I don't know if they ever found a note. Do you think that Chris killed himself because he couldn't make it as a wrestler?
I know that that's what that's the story. Whether or not that's the truth, I mean, because that's even what Kevin has said.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's a screwed up situation.
Yeah.
I mean... Because 3 years prior, his brother died, so maybe it had something to do with that, too, and all that bundled up frustration and emotion and depression just got to him, and he just couldn't live anymore. I don't know.
Let me kind of put this in perspective. When Mike committed suicide in 87, it was basically because the illness that he had, because he had acute toxic shock syndrome. Okay?
Yeah.
he thought he was getting better, but he was pushing himself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And a lot of that was getting to him. And he felt like the only way to end this illness is to end his life. So that's what happened there. That was in 87. Now, here we are in 91. Chris is, he's feeling like he's letting people down. He's feeling like he let his father down. Because, again, Fritz really pressured his boys. He put a lot of pressure on those boys. Okay? So he felt like he wasn't living up to the potential that his father thought he had. So, unfortunately, he committed suicide.
Yeah.
Back in 84, David didn't commit suicide. David died because his stomach blew up.
Yeah.
And he's the only one out of the brothers without – Kevin's still alive.
Yeah.
But
and then the first
Chris,
son that died by –
Chris and Mike punched their own ticket, right?
Yeah. So did Carrie.
Yeah, Carrie punched his own ticket.
Yeah. But, like, and not really to jump ahead here, I mean, we'll get into it more, but basically Carrie was going to go to jail. All right?
Yeah.
Carrie basically figured either go to jail or meet my brothers up in heaven. That's the way, I guess, he put it to some people. He decided, I'm not going to serve the jail time because I'm probably never going to see my kids again. So he did that, but that's a discussion for later on in the show.
Yeah, it's a sticky situation when you talk about the Von Erichs. But getting into his career a little bit, because right off the debut, they think they have something, right, Doug? It's not like let's say I was going to become a professional wrestler tomorrow. The odds of me succeeding are very limited. But if my dad's a promoter, you got to think the odds are better, right?
Well, look at Greg Gagne, right? Son of Vern Gagne. And Greg was a great, Greg didn't want to be a wrestler. Greg wanted to play football for the Atlanta Falcons. As a matter of fact, he had been drafted by Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
Vern pressured him to be a wrestler. Eric Watts was pressured by his father.
Yeah.
Okay. How well did that go? Mike Graham, pressured by Eddie Graham. I mean, it's a pattern here. I mean, if you really think about it, Vince McMahon is the only father that did not pressure his son to get into the wrestling business. When Shane was a teenager and Shane worked in a warehouse, he asked his father for a raise. Vince said no. Shane said, well, then I'm going to quit. And Vince said, go ahead. He goes, I'll be more proud of you if you don't work here.
Yeah.
And he left. He came back, obviously.
Yeah, he did.
But no pressure from Vince. Vince McMahon is the only promoter I know of in wrestling that did not pressure his son to get in the business.
Not even Jeff Jarrett's father.
What was that, Eric?
How about Jeff Jarrett's father?
Same thing with Jerry Jarrett and Jeff Jarrett. Yeah. I don't know if he pressured him. But it's kind of the thing, because, I mean, obviously we don't know. We only know as much as we're allowed to really know.
Exactly.
And it's kind of the ancient thing with old promoters. Who can you trust? That's why Gagne held the title for so long at AWA. That's why a lot of promoters held the titles. That's why Fritz Von Erich held the title. And then that's why they get their kids into the business and make them big draws, because who can you trust to be your top guy and that's not going to fuck you over? You got to be able to trust your own family. That's about all you can trust. So it really was kind of a smarter decision for them in their heads, because they're not trusting everything into somebody that they barely know.
Yeah, exactly. But on the other hand, it worked out for Vince McMahon, too. So,
well, Vince had the money to throw around, though. A lot of these promoters really didn't have
true.
Money to throw around. But Vince
knew
that he, the guys he could try, and that's why he took his company national.
Yeah.
Right, and he offered the guys the money he offered because it's just like, okay, you're not going to fuck me over if I'm going to pay this this amount of money.
Yeah.
Right.
It'd be like, it'd be like the Patriots, just to use this as an example, if the Patriots did say that they were going to pay Tom Brady, like an, if they offered, the Patriots offered Tom Brady like a $45 million contract,
yeah,
he would have he'd probably take it and not go to Tampa Bay. But, or because, you know, he finalized the deal with Tampa Bay, he's not going to just turn around because he's already signed the contract. Or I don't know if he's actually signed the contract or not because, you know, obviously he can't get there.
Yeah.
But they've agreed to the terms. So he's not going to turn around and say, all right, New England, fuck Tampa Bay, I'm coming back to you.
Yeah.
I mean, he could technically until he signs the contract, but that's why they have – I believe they still have, you know, fax machines to where they could fax those documents over to them and say, hey, look, you know, sign me.
Yeah. Sign, seal, and deliver.
Yeah, it seems smart. And, that's how Fritz was really known to do his business, because that's not to plug our last episode again. Scott Casey told us that, you know, and he was there. He said, there's no reason to be a babyface in world class, or you know where your limit is, because you're not going to be the big draw. The boys are going to be, and you either be cool with that or you leave. And that's how Fritz ran the company. Which Vern Gagne can get some flack for pushing Greg so hard, right? Because Greg, is he going to go down as one of the greats?
No.
Good tag team wrestler, but nothing huge, right?
Yeah, he was a great tag team wrestler. You know, he had amateur skills. Couldn't cut a promo. Now, he could work very long matches if he had to, and he could sell.
But he was never the most over in AWA.
No, but he made sure, because he also knew that he wasn't, you know, one of the greats, but he also helped develop, like, train some of the greats.
Yeah, that's important. I just don't want to get away from this point, because Eric Watts kind of failed, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it's no fault of his own. It's just he's not – he was not built for the business.
Okay. So those strategies, because when we brought those up earlier of fathers bringing their sons in, we're kind of making it negative and saying where it doesn't work. And I don't want to do that, because in world class – it worked, right? They were over as hell.
Exactly.
Kerry and David.
In the 80s, they were.
Kevin was kind of up there.
The three of them were over.
Yeah. Especially when they worked in their six-mans.
Yeah.
When they worked in their six-mans, and even Mike, when Mike worked in a six-man with any of his brothers.
Yeah.
Or in a tag team, Mike was over. All right. So
It worked.
Mainly because, you know, you had the Freebirds, but then when the Freebirds left, you had another, you know, trio kind of come in, and that was Chris Adams, Gino Hernandez, and Jake the Snake Roberts. And they had heat.
Yeah, those are, you could say, three legends.
Yeah. They had heat. They knew, I mean, because Chris had, you know, Chris had spent time as a babyface, okay? He had spent time as a babyface. He was with Sunshine for a little while, and Sunshine was probably the most over female babyface in the company, because she led, you know, she managed many guys. She managed Scott Casey for a while, all right, and, you know, she would help get, you know, other babyfaces over, but she didn't have to be with Devon Eric. She was. She was over by herself. So, you know, with Scott Casey telling us last week, you know, if your last name wasn't Von Erich, you couldn't get over as a top star. Sunshine was one of those people that could get people over as a top baby face besides the Von Erichs. She was never associated with her. She was never associated with the Von Erichs. Her aunt, Stella Mae, was. As a matter of fact, Stella Mae, you know, managed Mike for a while.
And oh, wow. I would never disrespect Sunshine because I think she was a great manager and a lot ahead of her time. But when you talk from a casual fan, when you talk about legacy, when you talk about world class, what do you think of?
Obviously, you think of the Von Erichs.
The Von Erichs versus the Freebirds.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly, around that time. But then, you know, when the Freebirds left, yes, the Von Erichs still had people to work with, but there were other people that you could put on that level of, okay, yes, the Von Erichs were the top guys, but there were people that were not that far behind them. Sunshine being one, yeah. Iceman Parsons being another, Chris Adams. Was a baby face. He was over. You know, Kabuki, when he was a baby face, he was over. I mean,
Gino.
He was so over that people were shocked as all hell when he turned heel on Scott Casey and Sunshine. That's what got him the heel heat, got Kabuki the heel heat, is when he knocked Sunshine on her ass.
Yeah. So that's definitely interesting. Let's get into favorite moments. Let's do some favorite moments. Well, what's your favorite Kerry Von Erich moment, Eric?
Probably when he defeated Ric Flair for the NWA championship after his brother died. Even
tough
though he
quiz.
Only
what
move
did he use?
I'm not sure.
Backslide.
Doug? A backslide.
Yeah. I mean, and it was one of those moments, not a lot of people remember it. Well, I mean, people remember it, but a lot of people didn't care because a lot of people missed David.
Yeah. Because it's not that. Well, we already established David was first in line, right? He was getting that world title shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
when
he died,
from even Ric Flair.
And I don't think that Kerry Von Erich was even in line, really. It was more of a let's do this for Fritz thing, right?
Yeah, it was
basic
in the moment
yeah.
thing.
I mean, Kerry, they had been building Kerry up, though, for a couple of years. Because, you know, back in 82, he had that match with Flair at that Christmas Star Wars in the cage, which started the Freebird feud. And they were looking, like, I think there were people that wanted. Like, until, like, the NWA at one time, did want Kerry as the guy. But then, you know, they took an even closer look at David and said, wait a minute, no, fuck this guy. We want David. But then David died, and it's just like, all right, well, we'll put the belt on Kerry. But they said it's only going to be a couple week reign. It's going to be a feel good moment because Flair has other commitments in the Carolinas that he has to attend, that he has to defend the title for.
Yeah.
Yep. Didn't they not trust? Didn't they not trust Kerry because of his problems? Oh, sorry, Doug.
Well, he didn't really have the problems back then. But it was more of, I don't think the NWA really trusted Fritz.
Okay.
Because you got to remember, at that time, the NWA, and Jim Ross put this perfectly, the NWA was a non-violent mafia group.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, they wanted to be violent back when Vince McMahon wanted to end the territories. Matter of fact, there were actually some promoters that said, why are we having this meeting to end the territories? Why don't we just kill this motherfucker that wants to put us out of business?
Really?
Yeah. Jim Ross even said it. Because the NWA promoters, or a couple of promoters, had this meeting like inside the bathroom, and JR's in there, you know, dropping a load. And they're saying, why are we having this meeting? Let's just kill this guy. Like, why are we going to let him put us out of business? Let's just have him killed. And it's just like, but like, so the NWA was more of, these are guys that they had their people they trusted. They trusted people, you know, in St. Louis. They trusted people in the Carolinas. They trusted people for the longest time, and then that blew up. They trusted people in Georgia.
Yeah.
Until that blew up, until Vince bought that territory.
Right.
And then, so it was just more of, you know, I don't think they really trusted Fritz. They didn't trust Fritz. Even though Fritz and Bill Watts were two of the more loyal guys, they didn't always ask for Flair to come into their territory, but they knew they could draw big money with him. The NWA as a whole, as like a board, didn't trust, you know, really Fritz or Bill to, they didn't think that Fritz or Bill had like the big stars. Like, they right. wanted David to be champion, but after David died, they're just like, all right, Kerry's there, but we don't know if we have the faith in him anymore.
Do you know if David was set up for a long reign, or was it going to be the same deal?
I don't think it was going to be the same deal. I think it was going to be for a while. Obviously, you know, he would drop the belt back to Flair because Flair was their guy.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm not 100% sure.
Well, the documentary I watched last week for WCCW, I think Flair said, it for David it was going to be a kind of a long run, which for at least David, he was set up to be
right
long term champion.
Yeah, and that probably is the case. I mean, I don't necessarily remember. I mean, remember, a lot of this happened before you or I were even born.
Right, exactly.
So, but like with Kerry getting the run, and you got to remember too, is that like back in those days, I mean, Kerry just didn't wrestle for World Class. I mean, he made some shots for Mid-South too.
Oh,
because,
wow.
You know, back in like 84, 85, Bill Watts and Fritz Von Erich, you know, Bill Watts and Fritz Von Erich had always been friends.
Right.
And you got to remember back in those days too, like with the territories, and I kind of tried to, you know, talk to Scott Casey about this last week, but, and we just kind of glossed over it, was back in those days, if a guy is working in your territory and it's time for him to go, like you can't do any more business with him, you would usually call another promoter and say, you know, hey, you know, this guy, he's finishing up some bookings for me. Can you use him? And Fritz and, you know, Watts were known for that mostly. They always traded talent. Kamala, one man gang. They would, you know, they worked for Bill Watts. After Bill Watts, you know, got what he could out of them, he would call them and say, hey, I have, you know, these big guys, these big monsters. They would probably be good opponents for your sons. Do you want them? Fritz would say, yeah, bring them in. King Kong Bundy worked for World Class first, and then Fritz called Watts and said, hey, I got this big guy Bundy, I can't, there's nothing more I can really do with him, do you want him? And you know, they would trade the talent. And then sometimes Fritz would send Kerry to Mid-South, say, hey, can you do a couple, I want you to do a couple shots for Bill,
right.
And, you know, we'll continue the feud there. So it was, you know, back in those days, the promoters were friendly enough with each other to be like, hey, you know, I got these guys, or hey, do you want to borrow my top guy for a couple of shots? And that's what they did.
Sweet. That would be awesome if they did today. Trade.
Dan, go ahead, Eric.
So I was going to say that would be kind of cool. They kind of did that today.
Yeah, but I don't think there's that. Yeah.
New Japan
there's not necessarily
ROH
that.
They, that
well,
partnership.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, there's not really like that trust today.
I don't think they had that
right.
trust back then either. I think they kind of came together towards the end for necessity, right?
Well, Bill and Fritz were friends.
Yeah.
So it would always be like, you know, one man gang. Or I gave the example of one man gang and Kamala.
Yeah.
They would work for Bill. They would, you know, get over in that territory, and then it would be time for them to go. Bill would call Fritz and basically say, hey, these guys, they work for me, but I'm done using them for now. Do you want them for a while?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. And it was the same that Akbar went back and forth. Because Akbar, you know, one of Fritz's right-hand men, and also, Akbar was friends with Bill Watts. So it's like, okay. And, you know, everybody trusted Akbar.
Yeah.
So it was also, too, like Akbar kind of acted as the, you know, kind of the liaison between, you know, both guys.
Right.
Because he drew money for both.
So let me just get this straight. Was the NWA American Heavyweight Championship, was that like world classes, world title?
That and the Texas title were their two main belts. Basically, but the America's title was basically, I think that's what evolved into the WCCW world title. Because then they got rid of the Texas title, I believe. And then they just had the WCCW world title.
Okay. So, Kerry Von Erich, he feuded with Gino Hernandez for the title, right? I watched a couple of those matches a couple days ago. I watched a match with Gino Hernandez and Kerry Von Erich. The work rate in that was fucking incredible. I need to do some notes on Gino Hernandez. I know he's a tragic story too, but he could go.
Well, and here's the thing. Gino was one of the guys Kerry beat out, you know, for this episode. Gino was on the pole.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Didn't make it to the Twitter poll because him, you know, he got eliminated because not many people, and I'm shocked that nobody really wanted to see an episode, hear an episode on him. It also pisses me off because I think Gino is also an interesting story.
Yeah.
We'll play him back
in
a poll.
Gino and Kerry, because Gino was a natural heel. Okay. And Gino is also a top star. You know, he was a top star in Houston. You know, when Mid-South used him, you know, he was pretty over. But also, too, Gino's story is kind of unique because it's long been rumored that Gino is the illegitimate son of Houston promoter Paul Bosch. Hasn't necessarily, like, nobody's really confirmed it. I think on Dark Side of the Ring, Gino's mom kind of avoided the question because she was more interested in finding out whether or not her son was murdered. But no, the Gino Kerry matches. Cause and Gino was great because when Gino would pin Kerry, and I've seen a match where, you know, Gino cheated to beat Kerry.
Yeah.
The fans wanted to fucking kill him.
Well, yeah. That was their boys.
Exactly. But, you know, Gino was a great adversary for the Von Erich family.
Yeah. Like many others. But Gino Hernandez, yeah, I watched one of those matches the other day. It was crazy how good it was. Well,
down
we
in
did
the network.
Yeah. What?
Is that
yeah,
in
I
the
saw it on the network. Yeah, it was on the network. I forgot the date, but it, yeah, it was on the network, and it was a really good match.
I think it's sometime in '84.
I believe so too.
I'll go back and watch.
So yeah, he had great feuds with him. Obviously, Gentleman Chris Adams when he turned heel. Those big guys that would come to the territories that you were talking about. The biggest feud in Kerry Von Erich's career has to be against the Freebirds, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because
yes.
And it was more of a, you know, the Freebirds, Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy, they cost Kerry the world title. And then it's more, the six-mans were just unbelievable. But, like, that feud kind of died down, you know, after David had passed, because it's just like, the feud was built more on Kerry, David, and Kevin versus the Birds.
Yeah.
Mike tried to fill the void.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to disrespect Mike Von Erich, because Mike really was a great hand. It's just, unfortunately, sickness just took over.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not his fault. You can't help when you get sick.
And Chris wasn't ready to jump in the role whatsoever, right?
Well, at that time, Chris was still just a teenager.
Yeah.
They used a fake cousin named Lance.
Don't get me started on that motherfucker.
Get started on him. That's something we should. We definitely need to. Because I don't know if we're ever going to be able to bring him up again, or what else he would be relevant towards. So get into
yeah. What
Lance.
Is the backstory between that?
Get into it, Doug.
All right. So around 86, or like late 85, early 86, Mike had the battle with, he was in a hospital. People thought he was going to die. And Kerry and Kevin, they were still there, but Fritz was looking to have, like, another Von Erich for the six mans. So they got this guy. They said that he's the son of Waldo Von Erich, who is Fritz's brother or something. Because him and Fritz were a brother tag team back in the 60s. Brought in this guy, called him a Von Erich. Good looking kid. Decent athlete, but he wasn't a Von Erich. And see, it was around that time where Fritz, because everybody believed what came out of Fritz's mouth, because everybody believed that Fritz would not lie to the people of Dallas, would not lie to Texas. But they were starting to see that Fritz is, oh my God, this motherfucker, he's going to lie to us. When Lance decided to, run for the hills, and Fritz actually went on TV and said, this guy, he called himself a Von Erich. He's not really a Von Erich. He's a no good bastard. Okay. Well, he didn't call himself a Von Erich. You called him a Von Erich. You called him a Von Erich. You're the one that tried to sell us this bill of goods. That this guy, he was a cousin, that he's here to help the family, and all that BS. So that was, I think, the start of, okay, nobody's going to believe what Fritz, the bill of goods Fritz is selling you. And then when Fritz faked a heart attack on television.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that.
Oh, my God. Because people were so concerned. They were calling the hospitals. They were calling the morgues. Because they had you believing that Fritz was dying. That Fritz was almost dead.
Was Kerry still there at that time?
This may have been around the time where Kerry was recovering from the motorcycle accident. Basically, the reason why Lance was pushed more and more on TV, because he came in, like they introduced him in 85, but he really didn't come in until 86, and that was after Kerry.
Sorry.
Jesus. That was more like after... that was more like after, Kerry went out with the motorcycle accident. They didn't know what else they were going to be able to get out of Mike. Fritz wanted more Von Erichs. That's why that's another reason why Lance came in, is because they wanted more Von Erich, you know, because he didn't trust any of the other top stars, I guess, which is stupid because he had more. Yeah, no, when Fritz faked a heart attack, and because, again, people were thinking he can't stoop this low and tell us he's having a heart attack and not actually have the heart attack.
But does it... Is that hypocritical? Or does that just speak to how the business was back then? Because if Vince McMahon, and I think he's done stuff like that, if he did that today, no one would bat an eye. It's just another wrestling angle. Is it just because the times were different? Because people actually thought it was a shoot?
In your territory, and again, I'll use a term that not a lot of people use now because technically it's dead, kayfabe.
Yeah.
And you believed everything you saw on that television. All right. And people in that territory, because the promoters treated the fans in that territory like family. Not like, you know, we treat members of our family to where, like, when they're talking to us, we put them on mute and then just say, oh, my God, shut the fuck up. But, like, they treat...
How'd you find out we do that?
Just a hunch. But they treated their fans like they wanted their fans to feel like they were part of their family. So, like, people believed because they wanted to believe everything that was, you know, they wanted to believe that these promoters were good people.
Yeah.
And a promoter is a businessman. Okay. And your business, in order for your business to succeed, you need to make money. So you need to pray. And this is what a lot of these promoters did back then. They preyed on the emotions of the fans. They wanted to see, like, what the fans would buy into. And, like, you know, the whole deal with the Von Erichs and the Freebirds, and that the deal, you know, after David died, they had that parade of champions at the Cotton Bowl, like 60 to 70,000 people, or no, I think it was more like 40 to 50,000 people or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah.
They sold a lot of money because people were emotionally attached to David. 5,000 people went to his funeral. Okay?
Yeah.
Because people were emotionally attached. When you're emotionally attached, a fan being emotionally attached makes a promoter a lot of money. And promoters kind of use that, especially in the territory days, they use that to make their money.
Exactly.
So at the end of the day, do we write up the Fritz heart attack angle as tasteless? Or just him, you know, another, you know, shot off the rim, something that he tried that just didn't work? Or is it tasteless for the time in place, and especially when there was already so much tragedy surrounding the family anyway?
I think because of the tragedy that was already surrounding the family, I think that's what made it tasteless. Right?
Yeah.
You had a son that already died. You had another son that just almost died. You had a third son that could have been killed in a motorcycle accident and then, by the way, lost his fucking foot. So it was tasteless at that time. If it were to happen today,
yeah,
like, nobody gave a fuck when Vince McMahon blew himself up in a limousine.
I was going to say that. If it happened today, I think it would be cool, but I think it would be 50-50.
Yeah.
You never know now.
Nobody cared. They just figured, oh, good, we don't have to see Vince on TV now.
Now let's backtrack, fellas, for a little bit. Because we can't gloss over the Freebirds in this story, because they're an essential part of the story.
Right.
Exactly.
What made that feud so electric? Eric, I want you to answer this one. And then if you need some backup from Doug, that's fine. But
I guess it's the fact that this it was the three Von Erichs, and the way that it started when the Freebirds turn on Kerry at in the steel cage, cost him the title. That brought heat, and so and then cost him the title. So that started the heat, and just snowballed from there.
Yeah, and also too, the Freebirds were a new, fresh act, because there was a lot of guys, you know, in the territory at the time that were just past their prime, but here you got younger guys,
yeah,
fresh faces. Business boomed.
Boomed.
Okay, it boomed, and with the Birds, Buddy Roberts was a veteran. Michael
yep.
Hayes was a good talker. Terry Gordy could work. All right. So Terry Gordy basically carried the workload. Huh?
They were baby faces. They were big baby faces before they turned, right?
Yeah. Well, Michael Hayes. Well, yeah. Hayes and Gordy were, yeah. But it was basically, you know, fresh faces. I mean, that's what made it work, is that, like, all right, we've never seen this before, but they fucked over our boys, killed these motherfuckers. Because the fans, you know, at certain points, Michael Hayes has even talked about how he's lucky he got out of there alive sometimes.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's how dedicated the fans were. And that really says a lot to the product and the fans. Now, something I really want to touch on. Did Kerry almost have to go to WWF? Like, the ship had already sunk. And that this is where it's hard for us to keep it a Kerry Von Erich episode and not a Von Erich family episode. But
yeah.
Why do you think they're... Class was already a lost cause at that point. It was done.
Well, in January of 88, Fritz had sold the rights to World Class, even though technically they were still using a World Class name, kind of. Jerry Jarrett had already bought the company in January of 88. Now, they were still using the World Class name, but it was being more run by Jerry Jarrett than it was...
Fritz.
But, yeah, then it was Fritz. And I. So it was more. But, yeah, so basically it was Jerry Jarrett's WCW. And as far as Kerry going, Kerry, you know, he was in USWA Dallas, which
right.
is when WCW really went in. So when Memphis and Dallas merged and you had USWA Memphis, you had USWA Dallas. Kerry was in Dallas. He was still, you know, doing stuff, but Jerry Jarrett didn't really pay the guys that well.
Yeah.
And Kerry had the opportunity because I forgot who reached out or whatever. But somebody had reached out and Kerry you know, got the opportunity to go to New York. Now, some people might say, when I said earlier that Kerry could have been the one to carry the company, instead of Hogan, maybe it was 6 or 7 years too late, but he finally got the opportunity. And I think it was more of Vince realized, okay, Dallas is a dying brand, but this kid still has potential. So let's bring him in.
Yeah, but and this is another hard part because when you were a little kid, Texas Tornado was your hero, right, Doug?
Yeah. I mean, he was definitely my hero. I mean, even going back to the WCCW days when because we would get a local station because there are some local stations that actually like every once in a while, like every week by accident would carry wrestling promotions from other markets.
Oh, nice.
Because that actually used to happen. I remember the episodes of USWA, you know, the Memphis territory back when I was a kid. It would be on like Tuesday nights and Saturday afternoons. And then sometimes Sunday afternoons it would be on. It was a local station. It would usually air after the WWF program would air. But it was a local station that had 2 hours that would usually have like two 1 hour shows of wrestling on certain nights. And I think like even back then, I don't think it was the same station. I think it was a different one, but WCCW would be carried by this local market. Again, it was, they were usually pirated. So most of the time, like the station would air it without, the permission of, you know, market of like the Dallas market or something like that. So it would almost be like an illegal area because that's the way it was back then. You know, back in the 90s, it would be more legalized.
Yeah.
But when it happened in WCCW, so I would watch, you know, I'm maybe like 2 or 3 years old or whatever, you know, Dad would sit me in front of the TV. We'd watch some kind of wrestling or whatever. I kind of got hooked at Von Erichs. One day, the station wasn't working. I threw a fit. Mom called the cable company and asked, why isn't this working? And the cable company basically said, oh, the wind must be blowing, so we must have lost the signal. But, yeah, to kind of answer your question in the short way, which I should have already done, yes, the Texas Tornado was one of my heroes. Okay, and it was basically more of good looking guy, cool theme music, threw a great punch, the claw hold was kind of cool. I don't know why I just demonstrated on Daniel. You know, we're not on camera.
Well, you do kind of resemble Barry Von Raitt.
Okay.
Okay, so he was your hero.
Yeah.
All right, so this was Dougie's hero. But the thing is it's well known around wrestling that he was a shell of his former self when he got to New York. Looking back now, do you agree?
Yeah, because there was a lot he couldn't do. Because remember, you can only do so much. Like, he could he could still drop kick every once in a while, but he couldn't really get up in the air for a drop kick. He couldn't really do power moves. It was more of, he was a shell of his former self.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it may have been, you know, too little too late for him to get there, but he eventually got there.
Yeah. He made it to the show.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, I think by the time he got there, he was like his drug problems were already, you know, were already front and center. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but, like, and what's funny, too, is that, like, you know, the old WWF Hasbro line, which I, you know, collect, by the way, his figure that came out in, like, 1991, he was part of this, the Series 3 set of the series, so it was, like, late 91, early 92. His figure is very hard to find nowadays on an American card. And for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, wrestling figures are known as, you know, a lot of figures, like you could say mint on card or mint in package or mint in box. Wrestling figures, they're called MOCs. It's called mint on card because that's what the backing is called. It's called a card. Kerry Von Erich's figure is very hard to find on an American card.
Wow.
So you can find it. I actually have it on a French card because it's easy to find, but it's harder and it's actually more expensive to find it on an American card. On an American card, you probably have to pay between $150 to $200.
Wow. How much do you think it's worth today? Do you have one, Gary?
I don't have an American. I have it on French.
Okay.
But
are those worth a lot too?
People, huh?
Are the French ones worth a lot too?
The French ones you could buy for like $35 to $40.
Okay.
Yeah, dang, I'm trying to get you to talk.
You didn't tell me what you were talking about.
You're talking about figures.
Of course we were. So, yeah, a lot of people think that he was a shadow of his former self. And he couldn't do as much. But this is the time. When you're a kid, you really don't give a fuck, right?
No.
No. Ego who looks cool.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of guys that are probably, you know, past their prime. But, you know, back in the, you know, 90, 91, 92, which was my favorite era of wrestling, who gives a fuck who was past their prime? Kito Santana was way past his prime, but I was a fan of his when I was a kid. Like, looking back on it now, you realize how much, you know, Kito was past his prime. But...
But as a kid, you don't know.
I didn't care back then. I didn't care that Snuka was past his prime. I definitely didn't care when Piper was getting to be past his prime. I was still a Piper fan.
Yeah, you're only 6 years old, 7 years old. And you don't know any better. I mean, not any better, but you don't know the stakes.
Right. Ric Flair was past his prime from 1997 to 2008, but nobody gave a shit.
Yeah.
Not necessarily true at all. He still had good matches.
He still had good matches, but still, especially from like 2003 to 2008, when you could see the belly hanging out, over. Nobody gave a shit. People still suck him off today.
Giving someone necessarily praise isn't sucking them off.
Well, it is to me.
Okay. So, as a fan, it probably made you feel jubilated when he won the Intercontinental title from Mr. Perfect. Tell me a little bit what you thought about the match, looking back at it.
When I watched it, I'm sure when I was a kid, I was probably happy. You know, watching it again years later wasn't a technical masterpiece. But it served a purpose. Purpose was putting the title on the relative newcomer, and you know, having the fans go home happy.
Exactly.
Was it a little anticlimactic for him to just lose the title back to him, to Perfect, a couple months later?
Yeah, but also too, I mean. Kerry was getting a hell of a rub because, you know, he was friends with Ultimate Warrior, you know, I guess on screen. And, you know, they had a magazine article about how the two of them were training partners. So it didn't hurt Kerry that he lost the title to him. It's just, you know, they looked at Perfect. They needed a heel Intercontinental Champion, and that's what Perfect was.
Exactly.
Perfect was a heel, and he could get the belt over better having really good matches.
Now, his one and only WrestleMania match is with one of your favorite wrestlers of all time, the late, great Dino Bravo. What did you think of that match, or is it just great for him to have a WrestleMania moment?
It was great for him to have a WrestleMania moment. The match wasn't great. I mean, Bravo was way past his prime. Kerry, again, there's only so much you could do with Dino Bravo. Because one, he didn't like to sell. Two, you couldn't necessarily lift him up for a backdrop or do like all these big power moves to him because he had that Greg Valentine low center of gravity to where he didn't like to leave his feet. So it was great for Kerry to get a WrestleMania moment. I wish it was against a better opponent, but oh well.
Now in 91 on a UK tour, they reignited the beef with Ric Flair and Kerry Von Erich. Smart move. Should they have done it for television a little more, or was it just, all right, we're going on tour, this is a good match, we know he can get over?
Well, they did the same thing. They had Rick work with Kerry Von Erich because they knew of the history. They had Rick work with Tito because they knew it could be a good match, and it was. So it just worked. They could have done it on TV, but the thing about WWF's television programs at the time is that they were just the matches on there were just supposed to be only like 3 to 4 minutes.
Yeah.
So like on TV, unless it was for like a Saturday night's main event where you could do 10 minutes if you had to, I don't think it would have gone over very well.
No.
Just like when Kerry lost to The Undertaker in less than 4 minutes. I remember watching that when I was little. I was pissed.
Yeah.
I think I bit Dad.
So his last big match, really, before his push, he kind of started going down lower and lower in the card, was the 92 Royal Rumble. Is there any standout moments from him you remember in that match? Because that's one of the best Rumbles of all time.
When he discus punched Flair and Flair fell flat on his face. Go ahead.
I was going to say Ric Flair eliminated him in that match.
Right. Which that blew as a kid. He eliminates Davey Boy, who again was another one of my favorites.
Who, Rick?
Yeah. He eliminates Davey Boy and then he dumps the tornado like back to back. I was just. I was pissed.
Yeah?
Oh my God. It was heartbreaking.
And so any more, because we're going to get into the sad stuff, and this is getting towards the end here. Any more you guys want to touch on the wrestling career, Kerry Von Erich?
Go ahead, Eric.
I was going to ask you guys a question. If it wasn't for the motorcycle accident, how would his career have gone? Do you think he would have got a bigger push? And if he didn't have the drug problems later on?
Well, here's the thing. When he had the motorcycle accident, they didn't have to amputate his foot right away. He tried to walk on it prematurely, and he put so much pressure on it that the damn thing turned red. But he was trying to rush himself to get back because, again, he did not want to disappoint his father. So had he not rushed everything, he would have been fine. He would have come back and everything would have been good. But it didn't happen that way.
Right.
And it's a hard thing to predict, too, because I don't want to say that he would have never gotten the drugs or anything, but obviously the accident's what caused him to get into opioids and stuff like that. I think he still would have went to New York eventually. I think I don't know if too much would have changed, except he would have been able to go in the ring a little more.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys this. Let me pose a question for once.
Okay.
What do you guys think happened had he taken the deal or had Vince convinced him to leave Texas and come to New York in 83? And
ooh,
we would have had, it wouldn't have been Hogan. It would have been Kerry beating the Sheik for the title and holding it. I mean, would there even be a WWF today?
You could make a case that there would be an AWA today. Because if Vern keeps Hogan, that's a whole different scenario, right?
Yeah, because you would have, and again, you look at it like this, there would be such an even playing field, I think, because Flair was the face of, well, not necessarily the face, but Flair was the top guy in the NWA, and Dusty was the top baby face.
Yeah.
Your top baby face in Mid-South, had he decided to stay there, it was JYD.
Yeah.
Your top baby face in AWA would have been Hogan. Your top face in New York would have been Kerry
Von Erich.
Yes, Kerry Von Erich. Not Kerry Grant, Kerry Von Erich. your top face in Texas had, you know, nothing happened. Because I'm sure, like, if Kerry would have went to New York, Fritz would have never let David go to Japan. Your top face in Texas would have been David Von Erich. So there was such a balance of power. There would have been such an even playing field.
Well, because I think Vince would have done what Vince did anyway. But with Kerry at the helm would have been weird. But I think you market Kerry the right way, I think it could work.
Well, Kerry was a very attractive man. The ladies loved him. And I think, and I kind of go back to where Vince said his biggest competition at that time was Bill Watts. But the problem is that Bill Watts, like, even though Bill Watts was the highest, like, had the highest rating on, on TBS and the Superstation, TBS still went with Crockett because they had that loyalty to the Carolinas. Even though Bill Watts is blowing their program out of the water.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think that you would have looked at it as the competition would be, I mean, Bill Watts probably would have been the one running wrestling. Because Vern Gagne still would have found a way to fuck up Hulk Hogan.
You think so?
Yeah.
You don't think Hulk Hogan becomes Hulk Hogan either way?
I think Hulk Hogan would have gone somewhere else and said, okay, Vern, you're still pissing me off. Let me go to somebody that's actually going to do me right. And I think of, you know, it would have been either Eddie Graham in Florida, because, you know, that's where Hogan was making one of his homes. It would have been Eddie Graham in Florida, or it would have been, you know, or probably would have been Bill Watts. Watts could have probably had Hogan.
Yeah.
When he might have gone to WCW sooner.
I don't think he would have lasted in the Crockett's.
Okay.
Not at that time, because they weren't as babyface oriented. They weren't good at that. They were a good heel promotion. Okay, so now that we got that out of the way, we're going to talk about something deep and sad. And something that sucks, but it's also the way of life. Kerry Von Erich unfortunately lost his life. And he took his own life. And it's sad. I really don't know how to set the scene here. It's terrible. But...
yeah.
And I would not recommend that. And, you know, there's always a better way. I don't know if we can put a disclaimer or a suicide hotline in the, because that's never the answer. But he was in a motorcycle accident. Let's talk about that a little first. He suffered a dislocated hip and badly injured his right leg. They couldn't save the right foot, so they took it off.
That was in 86.
And obviously he had a lot of career after that. We've already talked about it. But during that time, he got into drugs, opioids, painkillers. A lot of those were being assigned to him.
but he developed an addiction, as many people do. Kerry was in a lot of trouble. He had a 2-month break, right, Doug, from WWF, and he was going through some trouble.
Okay, so after the 1992 Royal Rumble, he started working the house show loop with Rick Martel. And on January 30th, 1992, he showed up in the Madison Square Garden in a match with Martel, and he was higher than a kite. They noticed it, and they basically said, we got to do something. February 6th, 1992, he was arrested for, I believe it was for drug possession. And then they drug tested him, he was drug tested before that. He failed the drug test, as did Superfly Jimmy Snuka, as did Hawk and the Legion of Doom, and they were suspended, all three. Kerry was arrested on February 6th, took a 2-month break, came back in April, didn't really have much of he was used to put over the top heels.
Yeah.
And then he was actually, they thought about using him at SummerSlam 92. He was actually supposed to be the original opponent for the Berserker, but then they're just like, well, we don't know if we could throw. Well, first of all, we don't even know if he'll be able to go overseas or not, into another country because of his arrest.
Yeah.
So we might just have to use somebody else. So they did. He left the company in early September, I think. Leaves the company. They were, the Global Wrestling Federation in Dallas, Texas, at the old Sportatorium. He knew some people that were working there. So he called and said, hey, I'm out of the WWF. Can I come in? And I forgot who was there that he knew. I think it was Black Bart. Or not Black Bart. Akbar. Akbar was there and Gary Hart was there. And they're just like, yeah, come on in. So we did. And it was kind of just basically he was there for a little bit. He was there till early January 93. Then obviously in February of 93, he committed suicide.
Gary, he was on his dad's ranch. It took a single gunshot to the heart, 44 caliber pistol, February 18th, 1993. Rest in peace, Kerry Von Erich.
I do want to mention... Oh, sorry, Doug.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just reading this on Wikipedia, and I think this should be mentioned. Bret Hart stated in his biography that he was told by Kerry that he thought about committing suicide. I think he told him twice. So he had thought about this for probably almost a year. He wanted to join.
Well, that's coming from Bret Hart, who's an asshole who looks for attention at every corner. So I don't give a fuck what Bret Hart has to say.
And a lot of that book. I mean, book was a great read and all that, but it was a long ass, but it was a big ass book full of a lot of hooey.
Yeah.
So we're getting towards the end, especially because we're outside and it's starting to rain.
Either that or we're getting beat on.
Oh, it's raining?
Final thought.
Wow.
Final thoughts on Kerry Von Erich. Go.
Imagine a his life ended too soon. May he rest in peace. And I wish I was around when he was wrestling. I'll have to go back and watch his matches. But yeah, he's a legend.
I would say my final thoughts on Kerry Von Erich. Legend. Great hand. Great family. Great legacy. Great in-ring worker. Decent promo. Definitely deserving of his Hall of Fame spot. A tragedy. But, you know, certain things in life are just the way they are, and it is a tragedy. But the legacy he left behind was also great. So I don't think we should forget about that. Doug, your hero, I want to close off on your final thoughts on Kerry Von Erich before we send us home here.
All right. Well, first of all, let me just say this. I know as far as like final thoughts, you got to remember, I mean, he left behind two daughters and his wife had divorced. And that's what a lot of this was about too, was his wife divorced him.
Yeah.
Wife actually divorced him the day before my 6th birthday.
Wow.
Okay. And he was going to go to jail and he had to make a choice. It was either go to jail and never see my daughters again, or probably never see him again, or not see him for a long time, or just say, fuck it, end it all, and I'll never see him again anyway. So it was either jail or death. Unfortunately, he picked death.
Right.
And it's sad because, you know, he was such a great hand in the ring, and you know, a lot of people looked up to him, myself included. And, you know, but the memories I have of him are of when he entertained me when I was a kid and the great matches that he had, not only before he lost his foot, but after. And, you know, the match at Super Clash 3, which was a shit show, the match he had with Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
And what a bloodbath that was. It was the best match of the show. I mean, it had a crappy ending because they lost it, or because he lost the match due to losing too much blood. He was one of those guys. I mean, he was a very likable guy.
Yeah.
Okay. And it sucks the way things ended for him. It sucks the way things ended for a lot of the members of his family.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, it's not something you take lightly. Just like a lot of the stuff that's going on in our world today, you cannot necessarily take lightly. I do because I'm a dick. Okay? Like a lot of this stuff lately with this whole coronavirus thing, I personally think life moves on. And I'm not going to live my life in fear. Kerry Von Erich, in his case, was he felt like there was no other alternative. And you can't, that's not a good way to feel. But he felt like he had already lost everything, so that's it. And it's a sad story. But there are, there are great moments and there are good parts of the story. Yes, it ends in tragedy. But unfortunately, a lot of great stories end in tragedy. A lot of people's lives, unfortunately, end in tragedy. Look at Kobe Bryant a couple months ago.
Yeah.
All right, how tragic that was. We talk about other wrestlers. Eddie Guerrero, Owen Hart, Chris
Benoit,
Macho Man, all ended, all their lives ended in tragedy. But it's up to you how you want to remember those people. You can either remember the good or you can remember the bad.
Exactly.
Some people choose to remember the good. In Kerry Von Erich's case, I remember the guy that entertained me when I was a kid, that was a good wrestler, had a cool theme song, had a cool punch, had a cool claw. You know, that being that, I have his figure upstairs. Not the French, not the American version. That's worth a lot of money. The French version, that's worth about $25. But, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, I got a magazine upstairs that has him on it, unless the cover got ripped off. But the point is that, you know, you remember, it's up to you how you want to remember people.
I would agree with that.
Exactly.
And
I agree with that.
I do want to say at the end of this, first of all, that was our Kerry Von Erich episode. Thank you guys. Also,
I thought that was our episode on Percival Pringle.
No. But that could come in the future, though, if Eric knows who else Percival Pringle became.
Well, we can talk about that. Okay, Paul Bear, okay.
But I want to encourage our listeners, I want to let them know that if you're ever feeling like that, you know, if you're ever feeling there's no ulterior, there's nothing else you can do. There always is something else. There's always help that can go get. There's always hotlines to call, you know, that
always
is not the way
to
go. Always someone to talk to, a friend, talk to a parent. Punching your own ticket isn't the way to go. So,
yep.
And rest in peace, Kerry Von Erich. Now, next week,
and all the Von Erichs.
RIP all the Von Erichs. Except for Kevin, because he's still fucking around. Next week, we'll be doing our tier list. I want you to put the poll up, Doug.
Eric's got a poll.
Eric, too.
Yep.
We have four generations. I already switched the generations.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay. What are they again?
The Attitude Era.
Okay.
Yeah. The Ruthless Aggression Era.
Okay.
Right.
The Golden Era.
Yeah.
Right.
And WCW's Monday Nitro Era. Basically 96 to 2001.
In WCW?
WCW.
Oh, okay. Fuck the new generation.
Fuck the new generation. Well, I figured since the new generation, the Attitude Era kind of overlap, we'll do that instead.
Okay.
All
right, guys.
Well, we're going to be able to talk about Dunk the Clown or Duke the Dumpster Drossy then.
Yeah. We'll just talk about
Beaver Cleavage. We'll be back Sunday night. Oh, Dan, you want to talk about our new format a little bit for Sunday? I know we talked about that last week, too. But you weren't on.
Yeah,
show.
This Sunday, and all the Wednesday Night Wars show that we usually do, new name, new format. The Wednesday Night Wars is still going to be our segment in our show, but we're going to be doing basically, we're going to call it This Week in Wrestling, or if you guys come up with a better name, we'll do something like that. But basically, our current event show, because we talk about the old school stuff on our main show Friday, here right now. That's what we do our retrospectives. That's what we do our rankings. That's what we do all our fun stuff on our main show. On our second show, we're going to have current wrestling. You know, we're going to talk all about the product. You know, if the product ever resumes and the world actually doesn't end, that'd be great.
Yeah.
We probably picked the fucking worst time to change format. But
we'll be fine.
It's basically going to be current wrestling, you know. New Japan, TNA, MLW, we're going to cover all services. WWE, we're going to give our thoughts on topics. We're not reviewing shows, really. We're going to be talking about topics around wrestling during that week and stuff about that. So stay tuned into that. We'll see you.
Updating our fantasy, too.
And we're going to be giving you updates on our fantasy every week. So look forward to that, and we'll be back on our main show Friday, and we'll have the This Week in Wrestling this Sunday. Guys, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you, Daniel.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. All right, man.
You guys keep safe. And everybody else out there, keep safe. Wash your hands. Do all the basic stuff. Common sense stuff.
I think I fucked up giving Daniel the claw too many times because I know you're not supposed to touch faces. So, Daniel, I apologize ahead of time.
Oh, God.
Well, wash your hands when you get in.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
And Doug, I might see you tomorrow. I might stop in. I just need to get out of the house for a little bit.
For somebody that's quarantining himself, if you show up to work, I'm making them put you to work.
I'm just stopping in to get some stuff because you hung up.